Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Friday. It's October 1st. Currently 36 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with me from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. And we continue to see a beautiful day out there as we have plenty of sunshine with it. As we continue throughout the day, we are going to see that we slowly warm up. We'll have a high of 64 today in Park City. We're expecting to see some clouds start to make their way in overnight, and we'll have a low of 42 going into Saturday. A mostly sunny day, so still pretty great out there. Maybe a few high elevation showers for a few little mountainous areas, but not much that'll impede our day. We'll see high of 66 as we continue a warming trend. Into Saturday, we'll see mainly clear skies, a low of 42. Sunday won't have a cloud in sight. We'll see plenty of sunshine with a high of 67. Again, that warming trend does continue for us ahead of that warm, ahead of a weather system that we'll see in just a moment. Sunday, we're expecting to see a low of 42 as we continue with the clear skies. Monday, plenty of sunshine once again. We'll see temperatures in the upper 60s as we go into Monday night. We'll see mainly clear skies with a low of 44. Tuesday, we continue to see the warmth hanging around with mostly sunny skies, near 70 once again. And once we get to Tuesday night, that's where we start to see that weather system making its presence felt. We'll start to see some shower activity going into the overnight hours. We'll see mostly cloudy skies and a low of 45. As we go into Wednesday, we'll start to feel a little bit of that chill back into our temperatures as we see shower chances hanging on, mostly cloudy skies and a high of 58. Going to Wednesday night, the shower chances still continue for us, mostly cloudy skies and a low of 43. Thursday, we start to see a drying trend, so we'll see slightly less chances of showers and we'll see mostly sunny skies with a high of 63. From the ABC Forecast Center, I'm meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Back to you, Leslie.
Thanks. Have a great weekend. Well, it is election season, and in lieu of our regular local news hour, we're going to be taking the next four Fridays to get to know the candidates running for Park City and Heber City, both the mayor and city council candidates. We're kicking it off this morning with the candidates for Park City Mayor Nan Worrell and Andy Bierman. And I'd like to welcome both of them to the studio. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
I've asked both of you to come prepared with opening statements. Nan, we tossed, and you go first. So let's start with you.
Great. Thanks, Leslie, and thanks so much for hosting this. I'm running for mayor of Park City because I believe a different style of leadership is needed to carry our city into our next chapter. I started my career as United States Navy nurse and have continued a life of service ever since. I learned from the wounded warriors that I cared for that leadership is about honor. Honoring those you serve, the community you serve, and the commitments you make. Sorry, I have allergies. I have incorporated those lessons into my leadership style throughout my career and know without a doubt that honoring the people you serve starts with listening to them. I'm known as someone willing to listen and to look for common ground. I'm also running because there's no overarching plan in place for connectivity between the major development projects that are coming our way. We can't wait until they're built to figure this out. Finally, I'm running to restore the relationship between the Summit County Council and the mayor's office. It's currently broken, and we simply don't have time for that. We have issues that need to be addressed jointly, and true collaboration is built on mutual trust and respect. I can make that happen.
All right, Nan, thank you. Andy?
Okay, thanks, Leslie. Well, it's been a wild ride over my nearly 4 years as mayor. It started off hot with the acquisition of Treasure Hill, some great climate work on the state level, and then the Vision 2020, a year-long effort that engaged over 1,700 community members to chart a course for the next decade. But then COVID hit, bringing everything to a halt and redirecting our attention to the pandemic. It was the biggest crisis since the Great Fire. It was really a triple threat, both a health, economic, and social crisis, and certainly we had no playbook. I'm so proud how our community rallied. 18 months later, we are mostly healthy and quickly recovering. The economic bounce back has been remarkable, but maybe too good. It's so fast, residents are feeling frustrated and disoriented. Going door to door, I'm hearing a lot of anxiety over growth, community, and climate. Given a second term, I'm excited to continue working on all these challenges. It begins by restoring balance. We need to put our locals first and value community over economy. I look forward to today's discussion and hope we can dive into both issues and ideas. So thanks for hosting.
Great. And glad to have you here again. I guess, Andy, I mean, why do you want another 4 years?
That's a great question, Leslie, and I thought hard about that. But a lot of it I do go back to that Vision 2020. The community came out of that with very clear alignment on the areas they want us to take bold action and have urgency, and I was pretty excited about that work. But we've spent most of the last 2 years focused on this pandemic, and although we've continued to get some things done, I think there's a lot left to do, and I still have the enthusiasm for it, and I've built the experience. My 6 years on council and my 4 years as mayor, I really think I'm the most qualified person to carry us towards those goals.
Yeah, Nan, and I want to ask you about this. Back in April 19 specifically, I texted you asking you to confirm whether or not you'd be running for mayor. You replied to me, quote, "As of right now, I'm fully committed to my responsibilities as a city councilor." So less than a month later, on May 18th, you announced that you would be running for mayor. What happened in that month to go from being a committed city councilor to a candidate for mayor?
Well, to be clear, I am still a committed council member and doing my best to fulfill the obligations that I have there. I had been encouraged for over a year to run for mayor. I had a lot of things that I had to consider. You know, did I want to take on that responsibility? Did I have the time to take on that responsibility? You know, there's a great deal of sacrifice, as Andy well knows, whenever you hold public office, especially at the mayoral level. Probably what set me over the edge was and made me decide to run. I received an anonymous letter threatening me, telling me I would be harmed if I chose to run for mayor. And there were several other threats in that letter. And as I thought about it, it made me more committed that someone would think that they could bully me into not running or threatening me so that I would not run. So That was the deciding factor for me.
Did you turn that into the comps?
Absolutely.
And any leads?
You know, we are keeping it. It is saved as evidence right now. And Wade Carpenter is willing to turn it over to the Attorney General's office when I say go.
All right. Well, I'm sorry that had to happen. That's pretty nasty. I'm going to continue with this just because I had this kind of in the back of the stack here, but as a council member, Nan, you've got voting power. Do you feel like you're trading to a position that would have less power? I mean, as we know, this is a weak form of government. I mean, in terms of the mayor, he's really just a figurehead.
I think that I have great confidence in the council. I have great deal of respect for the sitting council members right now, as well as the candidates that are currently running. I think the primary election gave us a good snapshot of who may be filling the two empty seats, or the two open seats. And I have confidence that I can work well with that group, and we together can move things forward.
And Andy, why do you prefer being mayor as opposed to serving on the council? Again, where you actually get to have, a say in how things are going.
Yeah, I've always felt one vote is not very useful by itself. The power is when you can build enthusiasm and you can build consensus on things. And I've always been very effective building consensus on the councils I've worked with. So I felt as mayor I could be effective on that front. I think I've proven I've been able to. And I wouldn't be running again unless I felt like I had solid support from the council. And you've seen vocal support from at least three of the council members that they would like to see me back as mayor. So I think I can be most effective in that role.
And we did agree to ask some of the questions that have come in from the community over social media. I got a few also via email. Council candidate Jeremy Rubel is asking you each to provide an example of something that you've learned as an elected official and how it influenced or reinforced your leadership style. Nan, do you want to take that first?
I've learned that the public is so engaged in this community, and it's absolutely fabulous that they are. I think that it takes a special skill set to be able to navigate that You know, people have opinions, and it's difficult sometimes to get the pulse of where does the community, the majority of the community, want to move on a certain issue. You know, I think that the loudest I've ever heard the community speak was when we talked about the soils repository. And the feedback that we got was very loud and very clear that that was not something that our residents wanted to have happen. Otherwise, you know, sometimes it's really difficult to discern that, and that's a skill that you have to develop, and I'm still honing that.
And Andy, would you like to ask, again, provide me an example of something that you've learned as an elected official, how it influenced or reinforced your leadership style?
Yeah, I still, you know, after nearly a decade in office, I still feel like I'm learning all the time, but I'll give you an example of when we came out of the pandemic. Going into the pandemic, we had just finished the vision, and there was a real mandate for council to have some urgency in our action. So when we came out of the pandemic and started feeling better about things last fall, there was a real push on the council to move forward quickly, to get the Arts and Culture District going, to deal with the soils, to deal with those particular issues. And at the time, I had cautioned that we might want to slow down, and that is something that definitely I think the instinct was right on that, and it's something that we should have done. Coming off of a traumatic period for a community, I think there needs to be time to heal and recover and get a new level of confidence, and we got that one wrong. Instead, we felt like we needed to charge forward. So that was a good lesson to me, both that we need to be careful about our timing, and probably as mayor, I should have been more forceful in my desire to slow things down.
I have a question specifically for you, Andy, from Nancy Delaska. She says, Andy, you and certain city council members have called community members negative, haters, and intimidating, and even cut off some from public comment when they ask legitimate questions or levy fair criticism. You seem to have also created new rules for public comment at council meetings that are arbitrarily applied to residents and not applied to council or staff. How do you defend this behavior, and how do you expect Parkites to feel like welcome participants in the public process if you as mayor don't rebuke it?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, I'm still always learning, and I think I could always do a better job of leading meetings. And it's certainly been an ongoing learning experience, especially during COVID, when overnight we had to retool how we do meetings in a form of Zoom. However, I don't believe I've actually ever called anyone personally negative or haters. And I've probably had some conversations. I know I've talked about negativity and anxiety in town as a result of COVID. In 4 years, to my knowledge, I've only cut off one speaker. And that was someone that was warned. They were getting personal, and I believe they crossed a line. And it wasn't even during a public hearing. It was kind of a bonus time during a retreat. And council was supportive of that. So, you don't receive any special training to be mayor, but I do my best to lead a good meeting and get it right. And I'm always open to criticism and new ideas.
I didn't know what to put this under the category of, so I titled it fake news. Both of you have held multiple get-to-know-the-candidate forums. I have heard reports that some of the information being delivered in these forums or get-togethers is false, and I'm sure you may have heard that from the opposing sides as well. Here's your chance to tell us what's true. Anything that you have heard that's happened in these get-togethers that is blatantly false. I mean, Andy, have something to correct publicly here?
I don't think I want to dive into hearsay on this one. That's just kind of an open book.
What about social media? Nan, anything you would like to correct?
I think that, as I said, this community is very engaged. I think that it's easy to throw pot shots. I think that it's easy to spin the truth the way that you want to spin it, and I think that we've seen some of that happening.
Ellen Shirk wrote that she wants to know who's telling the truth. Nan, you wrote a guest editorial about the soils repository a week later. Council members Max Doylney and Becca Gerber penned a editorial saying you were wrong and defended Andy. Basically, it's a he said, she said issue. Without those letters in front of me, who's right here? Who's telling the truth?
I stand by my comments in that guest editorial. I think that the voice of the community was heard loud and clear, and it would have been irresponsible for us as city council members to go against that. We weren't elected to push our own agendas. We were elected to represent the will of the people, and the will of the people regarding the soils was crystal clear.
Okay, so not having a soils repository is the best answer here, given all of the projects the city wants to do?
I believe so.
Andy, do you want to?
I think when we talk about these things, they're not a matter of opinion. They're a matter of record. Our meetings are recorded, and there are minutes to those, and you can see what individual council members said and supported. And Nan was supportive of the soils repository until we got public pushback, and then all of us took a step back. We sent out a press release to let the public know that we had heard them, we understood their concern, we were going to add additional public hearings and not rush into this. And I'm still a little bit baffled why Nan was the only council member that asked to be left off of that press release.
I asked to be left off of it because I didn't believe that it addressed the full story. The Park Record had run an editorial, a front page article just a few days before that with some misinformation in it. And we chose not to correct it, and I felt that letter was the opportunity to be able to set the record straight. And that's why I didn't sign on to it.
Do you still believe in the fact that we need a soils repository, perhaps just in a different location?
I think, are you asking me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that we do need a soils repository. I am very interested in looking back to Richardson Flats and getting back into conversations with the EPA. I understand that there's still some space in that repository that working with the EPA, we might be able to use.
And Andy, I mean, would you agree that the town needs some kind of repository to deal with our mine tailings?
We've needed a safe and effective and affordable solution for soils for years since Richardson Flat was closed to us. So, yes, every council I've been on during that period has been looking for solutions, and it would be wonderful if Richardson Flat could get reopened. But we've really struggled with that because that property has been in bankruptcy and receivership as well as in litigation with the EPA. So eventually the council started seeking other solutions because we felt like that wasn't going anywhere. I would never take it off the table because it's one of the best solutions, but I don't see it maybe happening quickly. We'll continue to work on it.
Again, we're talking with Park City mayoral candidates Nan Worrell and Andy Bierman. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Let's pick it up from where we were. I have heard a lot of name-calling this election. And that's kind of some of the stuff that I'm hearing from people at these forums that you're having to get to know. Andy, the word I hear from you is arrogant. What would you like to say to people who want to call you arrogant?
I'm sorry to hear that, and frankly, it hurts my feelings. I've always tried to be approachable as somebody that's rather tall and large. I know that I can be intimidating, so I try to actually. I've always felt like I try to overcompensate for that. I slouch and I sometimes sit down and try to make good eye contact with people and keep my voice down so I can be approachable. I do know certainly I have a lot of communications with people. I spend 2 to 3 hours a day as mayor, making phone calls back, texts, meeting with people. So I try to make myself very available. Sometimes I think in some of these cases, people are, maybe we disagree on things and they're considering that arrogance. And I don't know where to go from there, but I am open to the feedback and criticism, and will always try to do better because that is key as the mayor's role. You are the chief communicator for the city, and you want everybody to feel welcome and comfortable with you, and you want to get as much feedback as possible and share that around. So again, it hurts my feelings, and it's something I hope I can keep working on.
Nan, and how do you respond to people who say that you have a real knack for covering both sides of an issue but are basically spineless, so that you are unwilling to take a stand on anything?
Well, that's a direct question. I do take stands on issues. I stand against the council at times. I was very vocal when the murals were painted on Main Street. I was the only one that spoke out about it immediately. I spoke out about it at the meeting immediately following their painting, and the rest of the council was silent, and it didn't come up again. It wasn't discussed as a council until over 10 months later. So I do take a stand. I am a listener. I look at both sides of an issue.
Your stand was what? We cannot give these artists money to do these murals on Main Street?
My stand was the process was flawed, that we didn't follow public process. Our merchants didn't know what was happening, our police didn't know what was happening, and our residents didn't know what was happening. For something that major, I feel we should have been out in the public eye talking about it.
I was hoping we could get through this conversation without that, but let's bring it up. Andy, why wasn't public process followed?
I think we did follow the normal public process for Main Street activations, and all of council was both informed and supportive at the time. And, you know, what I want to say about the murals is this has gotten a lot of airtime, and I really question whether this should be the top issue in this election. There were hundreds of decisions we made on the fly during COVID, and I think if you look at the sum of the work, we got it right enough that this community has made an incredible recovery. And so whether you were inspired by the murals, whether you were angered by the murals, that was just one small piece of a difficult period that I think we need to move beyond, because I think there are much bigger issues in this community. The three I talked about, growth, community, and climate, are all looming, and instead we're talking about something that happened over a year ago that's just a blip in the Park City radar.
Let's talk money. Financial disclosure forms I've seen were from early August. At that point, Dan, you had raised just over $30,000. Andy, you were well over $39,000. Do you have an update for me at this point? Any idea how much you've raised, Andy?
I think I'm just under $60,000 at this point.
Nan?
I'm way behind. I'm about $41,000.
Okay. And of that, how much do you have left to spend? I mean, we've got another month to go.
About $20,000.
Okay, and Andy, how much do you have left to?
Oh, I'd have to check an update, but I think it's somewhere between $35,000 and $40,000.
Okay, and what do you plan to do with that?
Hopefully you're seeing I've got a lot of marketing out right now in the newspapers and the mailings. And frankly, I got a slow start on this. I was a mayor and managing a crisis, so I really didn't dive into the campaign hard until recently. So you're going to see me make a hard push at the end.
I'm flabbergasted by the amounts, and I know, Andy, 4 years ago you raised more than $45,000, which we thought was a lot then. How is it that we are doing? I mean, is that's just the way that the world goes around? I mean, how do we ensure that everyone can run for public office if we're putting $100,000 into it? I'd buy it like an affordable unit.
I don't like it, Leslie, but the first time I ran for mayor, I actually, I got outspent by double. I didn't even spend all the money that came in. I ended up donating a lot of it, and I lost that race. And, you know, there was a lot of criticism that I didn't get enough awareness out there. So I don't care to make that mistake again. I've got a lot of supporters that want to invest in me, and so I'm trying to use their dollars wisely to get the message out there.
Nan, Park City has a $61 million budget. That compares to the counties, and we're talking operating general fund here, I believe, 50 counties, $57 million budget. Park City has a third of the number of residents living within the city limits compared to those living in the county. This seems like an awful lot of spending. Are we overspending?
I think when you look at the fact that we have to operate sort of as a mid-sized city because of the number of visitors that we have coming in here to the county, we have to be able to provide the services to them. We have to have that level of support. So yes, we may only have 8,000 full-time residents, but we have our second homeowners, and we also have all of our visitors that we have to be able to provide services for.
Andy, back in 2019, the city council basically fired city manager Diane Foster. That cost city taxpayers almost $200,000. Looking back, was that a smart decision?
Oh, I think we were, council was unanimous, and it was time to move on. Diane served our community very well. I enjoyed working with her, but her skill set and temperament was not what we needed, and it wasn't moving things forward. The way these city managers have an average stay of 3 years in most communities. So when you negotiate with one, there is always a significant buyout package for them when you fire them, or termination package. That's just what they do to protect themselves, because they often have to up and move their families to new communities because how specific it is. So yes, it is something I will stand behind, that we made the right decision, and that our current manager, Matt Dyer, bias is better equipped for the place we are, and I'm still really happy that Diane found a great job in Aspen that seems to fit her well.
And Nan, why couldn't we have waited a year until Diane's contract was up? I mean, so we wouldn't have had to pay her anything.
I believe first of all, it's a personnel matter, and we can't discuss details of a personnel matter. But I think that the council just felt like the timing was such that we needed to move in a different direction than her skill set. As Andy mentioned, her skill set just wasn't where the council felt like it should be at that point in time.
And it felt that urgent?
It did.
And Leslie, it's not a contract. I mean, we have an overall contract. There's not an expiration date on it. So no matter when, whether we terminate somebody in their first year in that role or their 10th year in the role, the termination package is the same.
Let's see, 4 years ago, special events we were talking a lot about during the council election. COVID certainly helped us. What's the plan now as we move forward with future event scheduling?
Okay, well, that's going to be a policy set by council. What I can say about special events is in 2019, we made an effort to reduce special events, and they went down by about 15% on event days. We also reduced any subsidies or offsets incentives given to those events significantly, and council plans to almost phase those out entirely. I do hear from the community that there are too many special events still, even coming out of COVID when we're not up to full speed. And so one of the things I'd like to work on in a second term is reducing those further. I think we could call off about another 25% of our event days, and the community would be much happier, and I don't think it'd have a significant economic impact.
John Plunkett, who lives on Park Avenue, asks, should new outdoor commercial events in residential zones be encouraged or discouraged? You want to take that, Nan?
Outdoor commercial events?
Mm-hmm, that's how he wrote it. Outdoor commercial events in residential zones.
I don't think they should be encouraged. I think that we have an obligation to protect our residents. Our residents put up with an awful lot, especially those in Old Town that live in proximity of Main Street, where the majority of the events are. And so I'm not in favor of increasing the number of events or recruiting additional commercial events to go into the residential areas.
But you'll continue with Silly Sunday? That's probably the largest event happening in a residential area.
Silly Sunday's contract is coming up for discussion for the next year. I think that's going to be a robust discussion. The Main Street merchants still have some issues with Park Silly Market, and so I think that's got to be a broader community discussion. And perhaps there's another place that the market could move. I know Prospector Square is really looking hard to increase the number of activities that go on there. It's in a wonderful area for people to be able to walk to it, and I think that might be something for consideration.
I also noticed a survey, I'm not sure if it was the city putting this out, about Triple Crown coming back now that the contract has expired. Do you support Triple Crown coming back, Andy?
I don't.
Why not?
I don't. I think we need to look at events of quality over quantity, and I think that's an event that brings a high volume of people to town that aren't a big, it isn't a big economic driver. It doesn't necessarily reinforce our brand, and there's a lot of public criticism because it clogs up our rec facilities and our roads. Plus, they were a terrible partner during COVID. When we asked them to work with us and try to reschedule the event, they pushed back very hard. They threatened to come here anyhow, and for that very same reason, Steamboat, who was their other partner, cut them. And I think as their contract expires, it's going to be up to council, but my recommendation would be that would be a great place to cut.
So if that comes to you, Nan, how do you feel about it?
I've heard the same pushback from residents about what do we really get out of this. I know that I've heard from some of the lodging companies that this is important to them, that they're able to keep some staff on and otherwise down market times. I think that needs to be re-looked at post-COVID when our tourists seem to be coming in droves, especially our drive traffic. This past year, I know that the streets seemed even more congested during Triple Crown, and our residents kept saying, why are these people here? Why are you allowing these folks to be here? One issue I have specifically with the Triple Crown contract is that they get a subsidy from the city, and they're a for-profit organization, and I have a real problem with that.
We're going to get back. We're going to be talking a little bit about some of the city's development projects. I'm going to take a quick break. We'll be back. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour.
Nexus IT provides small to medium businesses with digital transformation to streamline business processes, customer relations, and revenue streams since 1998. Nexus IT is a proud supporter of KPCW. 435-200-5926 or nexusitc.net.
A cancer diagnosis is a life-changing moment. Before it are thousands of other experiences. Joys, tears, late nights, and early mornings. Years spent planning. At Intermountain Cancer Center, we're ready for the moment things change. We've experienced joys, tears, late nights, and early mornings. Years spent planning. And years spent building a team of cancer specialists. Learn about cancer services on the Wasatch back at intermountain.com/cancer. Intermountain Healthcare is a nonprofit organization and KPCW supporter.
Mark Baker here from ESCO Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical. And we are the proud sponsors of the Marketplace Morning Report on KPCW. Remember, the better the airflow, the warmer you'll be. Don't block air vents, and don't forget to install a carbon monoxide detector this winter season. More information at escoutah.com or 855-ESCO-NOW.
And welcome back. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. We're talking with Park City Mayoral candidates Andy Bierman and Nan Worrell. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Andy, 4 years ago, we were talking about how the city was getting into the real estate and development business. The city had acquired the Homestake and the Art and Culture parcels. Of course, there's also the ownership of the Woodside Park and the Senior Center parcel, the Gordo property where the Soils Repository was slated. These were all development projects that the city had anticipated doing. All of the project had barely gotten off the ground, and then public pressure just pushed them all back. So how come? It just seems like we're spinning a lot of wheels here.
It does feel like we're spinning a little bit. Being a landowner is not new to the city. You know, many of these lots we've had for a long time. Some of those have been recently acquired, but we've always owned many properties around town. But I do think that the public is uneasy with certain kinds of development. We hear less when it's infrastructure, if we're building water infrastructure, or we're doing roads, or we're doing rec facilities, those kind of things. The public seems comfortable with that. When it gets to housing, people are uneasy, I think, for a variety of reasons around town. And when we talk about lessons learned, one of the things that I think we should look at going forward is rethinking how we do our housing and broadening our engagement on that. And to do that, I suggest we look at forming a housing authority. Right now, we actually have a housing authority. It's just comprised of the council and mayor, and we make all the decisions on that. And I think there's a level of discomfort among some in our community that we are both the applicant and the regulator. And so I think there'd be real benefit expanding that housing authority, maybe reducing it to two council members and bringing in some community stakeholders like our nonprofits that work in housing, somebody from the home builders, somebody from the board of realtors, and getting more voices and more opinions on that. So there's a greater degree of both input and separation between the city and the process.
Yeah. So Nan, do you think this is a leadership problem, or does the council need to take some responsibility here? I mean, do we have a problem with our community outreach efforts for all of these projects that come forward and then get off the ground, and then, you know, public input sinks them?
I think that's part of it. I think that letting people know what we want to do, where and why, is important. I think that the cost oftentimes is a shock, is a sticker shock for people. I know that happened with the Arts and Culture District. You know, my stance with that has been, why does the city decide what it is they want to build and draw the plans for it and then try to figure out how to pay for it? If you or I are going to buy a house, or we're going to buy a business or whatever, we figure out what our budget is first, and then we move forward from there and decide what we can afford. I think the city needs to take a stand and say, this is what we can afford for a certain project, and if we have a bigger appetite for a bigger project, then we see who we can partner with, who can we bring in. I've been a big fan of public-private partnerships for affordable housing since I first took office in 2016. And I talked about it at the first retreat I attended as a council member, and was told by other council members that would never work, because no one wanted there was no incentive in it for developers. So I was really excited earlier this year when we pulled together a task force of people from the development, from the housing financing, from nonprofits, and looked at what would it take for this for a developer to be interested in? What kind of incentives could the city offer to partner with us? I was really excited. We put out an RFQ for developers to build affordable housing on the Homestake parcel. We had, and I understand, 9 applicants, and the committee has narrowed that down, and I believe we'll be coming back to council soon with that recommendation.
Yeah, but back to the Art and Culture District, we had a development application on that property. The council didn't have an opportunity to plan first and, you know, budget, you know, to budget first and plan late. I mean, they had, it was like, we buy it or we don't. So are you saying that you don't agree with the purchase of that property?
Oh, no, I do. I agree with the purchase of it. I'm talking about the actual, what we're going to put on that parcel and how much it's going to cost. You know, originally the plan for Arts and Culture District was $40 million. And I was a huge supporter of that because I believed that we could cover that with our transient room tax. And then the scope grew and expanded, and the cost of building exploded. And so it all of a sudden was over a $1 million project. And I think that we need to figure out, again, if we want to spend $40 million, then what can we build for $40 million, and who else do we need to partner with to build out the vision for the district?
Andy, you had brought up affordable housing. I want to get back to that. The council's 40,800-unit affordable housing goal. Does this even make sense anymore?
The 800-unit goal? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, when we set the goal, at the time, we had 15% of the workforce living and working in town. And when we projected forward with population growth and job growth, to keep that, we were going to have to add 800 affordable units. And so, do I think it's a little aspirational? Yes. Do I think we'll get there? We will. Will it be by 2026? We might be a year or two off. But we, you know, we've added during my term, we've added 157 new deed-restricted units, which has chipped away at that number. We've got a number on the horizon, I think several hundred more. We have land and funding available for. But this community is in desperate need of housing across the spectrum, on all levels, whether it's rental housing for folks that are workforce in town, whether it's senior housing, whether it's home opportunities for our young families. We have so many needs, and if we can't keep people living in town, we're going to lose our sense of community, and it's essential we keep working on this.
Yeah, and 800 units, Nan, seems arbitrary. I mean, it would add maybe 2,000 people to town and increasing our population by 25%. Are you still behind, then, that 800-unit goal?
I am, because we need to house our workforce. So we obviously have a real shortage of workers across the spectrum. I'm very concerned at the low number of our public first responders that live in town. If we have a disaster, if we are cut off from the Wasatch Front or US 40, our first responders, the majority of them, aren't going to be able to get to us. And I see that as a real concern for our community.
And this was something I had not heard a lot of discussion about, so I was glad to see Bonnie McLaren's questions come in. Nan, so dwindling housing options, increased traffic are directly related, higher wages only part of the puzzle. How do you intend to support and increase workforce housing within our existing mass transit system? I mean, how much accountability lays on the employer to provide or subsidize transportation and housing when the workforce is brought in from outside of town?
I think the employers are stepping up to that. I've talked to one Main Street business owner, and many of their employees live down in Salt Lake and rely on the bus between Salt Lake and Park City, only to find out that that bus doesn't run on the weekends or on the holidays. And so that business owner is paying an Uber to bring the employees up here. So the employers are getting more creative. I think that that's some low-hanging fruit of what we could do to partner with our local businesses. What kind of van share opportunities are there so that the employees that do live outside of town have a cost-effective way to get up here rather than spending all the gas and using their own car, which many of them don't have.
And Andy, how do we increase our local year-round workforce for the service industry as well as the additional staffing that's required for the ski season?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of fronts. Certainly, affordable housing is going to help on that, and we continue to push our large businesses in town to provide housing. And I think the project going on in the canyons will be a good step forward, where they're putting in quite a few units for workforce. But I think we also need to be mindful of our transit. One of the things that it became very clear during COVID is, although many people weren't using transit, we still had a lot of riders that were transit dependent. According to our surveys on those, the express route coming in, over half those riders don't have another way to get to work. So we had to run those buses regardless if we wanted to allow people to come into town. So we need to continue to hone that in and provide it. We also need to talk about childcare more. That's certainly been an ongoing need in our community. Affordable childcare is essential to our young families and allowing them to work. I'm excited about the school bond, and that if that passes, there will be universal pre-K. They'll expand elementary schools and offer more there, which will take some of that pressure off. And I know the city's always looking for opportunity to do things like more youth camps to help take some pressure off our young parents. And then the last piece is, we need to continue to work with our federal delegation on J-1 visas and immigration, and try to come up with something that is more sensible for our needs here. Because when things are hopping here, that workforce has been critical to supplement our existing workforce.
All right. Got so many things to talk about here. Let's move quickly then. Nan, as somebody who lives in an area that is not served by transit, will you try to revive the micro transit idea? It was something that the council considered back in 2017. But was then shot down by the public as being too expensive.
I'd love to revisit that. And I'm looking at High Valley Transit as they're doing microtransit. I sat down with Kim Carson recently to talk about it, and what their learning curve has been and what lessons they've learned that maybe we don't want to repeat. But I think that it's definitely something that we need to take a look at.
Yeah. And I guess, in 4 years, transportation is a critical priority, yet still we have no new park and ride options for the winter, that 400 spot, which is in flat lot, still not being used. The transit center at the Bonanza Park Arts and Culture District is off the table. So, Andy, how is transit being considered a priority? Transportation.
I think what you're seeing right now is a ton of groundwork that you're going to see some real motion in the next couple of years. This summer, we were able to do some improvements, or UDOT did improvements upon our request to 248 to allow for an inbound express bus. And next summer, we're going to be building a 450 to 500 car parking lot right off of the exit I-40. Very convenient and much more likely for people to use than the Richardson Flat pickup, as well as we're going to be adding bus service out to Park City Heights. And then our separation of the transit district into two pieces, where the county is going to handle regional and the city is going to be focused internally, is going to free up a lot of bandwidth for us. And I think we're going to be able to use that bandwidth to focus on things like microtransit, smaller vehicles and shorter pickup routes deeper into our neighborhoods. And also, this council's committed to investing more money in active transportation. You're going to see the first piece of that next year when we do a big improvement to the rail trail and put in a commuter lane for road bikes and e-bikes.
Twisted Branch. Nan, will you push to open Twisted Branch to the public so that we can get all of those cars off that very narrow and dangerous Guardsman's Pass Road?
I think it's certainly something to look at. It's not something that the council has had an opportunity to talk about yet. And so I want to know more information. I'd want to see all the facts. I think we need to consider unintended consequences if we do that. I think that certainly there's some benefit that could come from that. But I'd like to be able to study it with the community.
Andy, do you have a...
Frankly, it's not entirely up to us. That's a private road, and were we to replace the existing road with that, that would require UDOT's agreement, the property owner's agreement, and agreement with the city. When we last looked at that, I was new on council, and the reason council wasn't interested is because it would have been a huge additional cost to us to maintain that road through the years. So unless that's addressed and the parties are willing, I don't think we'll make progress, but certainly we're always willing to listen to opportunities and needs.
All right. Dan, you had said in your most recent email that you'll be getting very specific about your ideas, your skills, and what you intend to bring to the role of the mayor. Why haven't we heard about specifics yet?
I have a website, nanformayor.com. There's specifics on there. In my meet and greets, I've been talking about specific things as people have asked questions. And I've been certainly out knocking on doors and meeting people in the neighborhood.
All right. So what specifics, I mean, give me a handful of them, three of them.
If we talk about development, I think that we need an overall arching development plan that talks about connectivity. It frightens me that we have big resort-based developments on tap. We also have that whatever happens with Bonanza Park, Arts and Culture District, and we have potential for development out at Quinn's Junction at the film studio. And if all of those projects come on board without an overarching plan to connect them to each other, to the rest of the community, we're in real trouble. I mean, we think we have transportation problems now, but if we isolate each of those projects and approve them without considering how they're going to connect to the rest of the community, we're in real trouble.
I've heard several people tell me that they're voting for you, Nan, because you're a woman. Does that make you happy or disappointed?
I think that I am running this campaign on my qualifications and not on my gender, and I appreciate votes for whatever reason. I think that there is a sentiment that it's time that Park City had a female mayor, and I would be honored to have that.
Yeah, and how do you respond to that? I mean, the fact that people are voting for Nan simply by the fact that she's a woman.
Voting's a very personal choice, so they need to make their decision based on whatever characteristics they want. At the end of the day, I hope people make their choice based upon experience and qualifications.
All right. Rachel Pittard wanted me to ask, what do you intend for the LGBTQIA+ task force that is currently in place? Can we expect you to continue valuing its existence? Haven't heard a lot from them. Nan?
I think it's amazing. And I love the fact it started as a city task force. And I love the fact that they expanded it to include members from the community. I think there's a lot that can be done locally and to help get some visibility for that community, and anything the city can do to support that, I'm in favor of.
Yeah. Andy?
Yeah, I think Rachel asked about ongoing support, and I just want to point out, I think there's a ton of enthusiasm at the city, and personally, I've tried to be very supportive. When they asked me to come out and raise the surprise flag, I was there, and you know, it was awesome. It turned into a party. When they asked me to participate in the parade, Mayor Potter from Heber and myself carried the banner in the front, and I have never seen so much love for a float as that day walking down the street with the Pride Parade. I think the group has a ton of potential. It is certainly connected both in the city and in the community. It has direct ties to the executive office with one of the members of the task force working in the executive office. And they will have our support going forward, and I hope they go on to do great things.
Peg Bodell asked, can you support an initiative that would establish a citywide ordinance to ban fireworks in order to protect trauma to pets, wildlife, and members of the community that may suffer from PTSD, making Park City a year-round safe zone? Nan?
I think that that is something that we haven't discussed. I think it's certainly an idea worth considering. The fire marshal ultimately is the one that has the decision about whether or not we have fireworks, so they would have to be part of that conversation. I think we'd have a hard time convincing the community that we would no longer have 4th of July fireworks.
Andy?
Procedurally, I'm not sure what our powers are on that. What I will say, just as personal philosophy, I think it's time for us to look to alternatives to fireworks. I absolutely love fireworks, but I think there are now laser light shows, there are drones, there are things that don't have the same impact on our natural environment. And as we are choking on smoke this summer, the idea of putting more into the air and dealing with the waste of the fireworks and traumatizing our pets and some of our residents, it just seems a little over the top. So I hope we take a hard look at it and come up with some alternatives going forward.
At the core of the city's Vision 2020 is embracing bold change. Andy, what have you personally been bold about here in the last 4 years?
Well, I think Treasure Hill, you know, within a few weeks of office, I negotiated a proposal for a full buyout and then brought that to the community. And that's something people thought would not possibly ever happen. And it turns out, I think it was 78% of the community supported that. And we were able to put the deal together and buy Treasure Hill, which had vexed us for 35 years. HB 411, which is our renewable energy bill, which we took to the state. We got bipartisan legislation passed with the support of the utilities company to allow communities across Utah to convert to renewable power. That was something that we were told never could be done.
And Nan, what about you? What have you personally been personally bold about?
I've stepped out and stepped up for mental health. When I took office, the city was not involved in mental health care at all in the community. And when we lost two of our young, bright boys, we worked closely with the school district as well as with Summit County. I've been on the forefront of that from the city's standpoint, and I'm really excited and proud of the progress that this community has had in mental health over the last 5 years.
Okay. I've got underwriting to play. I also said that I would give you 30 seconds for closing statements. So, Nan, let's hear from you.
Well, thanks again for hosting today, Leslie. It's obvious after this hour that there's stark differences between the two of us, and I look forward to other opportunities to talk about these at community forums. I truly believe that I bring a leadership style at this time that we need. Park City, thank you for taking the time to tune in this morning. If you give me the honor of becoming your next mayor, I promise I will be accessible to you. I will listen to you. I will learn from you, and I will lead. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. And Andy, your 30 seconds?
Yeah. Well, my favorite part of this campaign has been the canvassing and events. It reminds me that we're still a small town, and you get a real feel for residents' concerns when you're standing there on their doorstep. I have lived the Park City experience, starting out in my early 20s selling skis and struggling to carve out a life here. I spent my first 6 weeks in Park City couch surfing, a quick lesson on how challenging it is to find housing, even then. I went on to build a business, work hard, had good timing, and I'm grateful that we've been successful enough to stay. Park City has been good to me, and I've enjoyed giving back. I love where I live, and I've fought for our community as mayor. Given another term, I will continue to lead with optimism, enthusiasm, and heart. Thank you, Leslie.
All right. Thank you, Andy. And again, thank you guys for taking the time, you know, to be here. More importantly, thank you the time for just stepping up and running for office. It takes a special breed. So good luck to both of you. And That's been the hour of the local news hour here again with Park City mayoral candidates Andy Bierman and Nan Worrell.